everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I'm fortunate enough today to be joined by a creator whose work I've followed for a long time. I think the first time I met him, I spoke with him and Brad Walker at San Diego Comic-Con about their run on Sinestro. I've been a big fan ever since, so I'd like to welcome Colin Bunn to the show.
Hey, Jace. How are you?
Good, man. Good. It's good. It's good to talk to you. It's been a little bit.
Yeah. It's. I was just saying. Time seems to be moving in strange ways. Sometimes it's moving super fast for me, and other times it seems to be dragging. So I'm not exactly sure how long it's been since we've talked.
Well, it's great. It's great to have you back on the show. You know, I've done interviews with you at shows before, but I've never done one of these kind of sit down and get a little deeper into the story. So let's dive right into it. The book we're going to be talking about is Brothers Dracul. And as you all are listening to this Aftershock Monday episode, the book comes out the following Wednesday. So it should be out April 11th. And why don't you tell our listeners what the story is kind of all about, Colin?
Yeah, so Brothers Dracul is a sort of an action horror story. It follows a well-known, you know, character in history and literature, and that's Vlad Tepes, the man who inspired the character of Dracula, the vampire. This book, however, focuses on Vlad when he was a teenager. When he was a teenager, he was actually taken prisoner by the Ottoman Empire, Vlad and his brother Radu. They were both held hostage by the Ottoman Empire to ensure that their father would play nice. And that's historical fact. We know that to be true. But what we didn't know is that while Vlad and Radu were being held prisoner by the Ottoman Empire, they were trained as vampire hunters and sent out on some of the most dangerous hunting expeditions they could have possibly embarked on. And this is that story of these two teenage boys becoming these fearsome vampire killers. And it's kind of the story of how Vlad Tepes became the man, the frightening individual that he is known to have been throughout history.
Wow, I can't. I've had the opportunity to check out issue one. I can't wait to read the rest. Just hearing you talk about it's getting me excited. So with Dark Ark, another title you've done for Aftershock, as well as Unholy Grail, and now you're transitioning to Brothers Dracul. All of these are kind of period pieces set in the past with kind of history as a backdrop. What do you think it is about telling these stories that are so kind of rooted in their particular time periods that's attractive to you as a writer?
I've always been more interested in period stories, I think. Long before I worked on, any of the Aftershock books, I was doing, books set in the Old West and books set in Prohibition, Chicago. And I just there's a lot of stuff there that I like. I think for comics especially, visually, I think they're more interesting. I think it gives the artist some really fertile ground to really make the story pop and do some crazy and just visually exciting things with the story. But that's not, that's the only reason. The other reason is, one, I've always been sort of fascinated with these different time periods, and I'm not ever going to call myself an expert on history, but it's always been something that has interested me, and I've always been drawn to stories set in these times that kind of led up to where we are now, and I like looking at how the stories in the past kind of reflect. They still hold water in the present, and they reflect current. They can reflect current situations and values, and that's always been interesting to me. And then for all three of the stories you mentioned, one of the things that excites me about them and I think helps those stories is these are all well-known concepts. When you talk about Unholy Grail, that's the story of King Arthur. And almost everyone knows at least enough about King Arthur to get a, you know, to get their feet under them with the story. Same with Dark Ark. We all know the story of Noah's Ark, and that at least gives you, allows you to get your feet under you. And with Brothers Dracul, most people know the story of Vlad Tepes. At least they have some, you know, some inkling or understanding of that story. And you can get your feet under you for the story before I pull the rug out and change things drastically. And that's kind of what I like about all three of those, concepts is that, you know, it allows you to, it allows me to change things from a position of mutual understanding. I don't have to build up very much in those areas because I can just say, this is the story of Vlad Tepes, and people have an idea of that already. So some of the groundwork is already laid for me.
So point of reference, and then you get to kind of build on whether you're changing things that, that maybe we knew to be true. How much do you consider that when you're building the story, you know, as far as staying true to history? I mean, it's a story, right? It's fiction, so you can change things around. Do you worry about fan reaction? Oh, that's not
going to happen. You know, like I said, I don't ever consider myself an expert. And I've always said I do just enough research to make myself very dangerous and to make, you know, I want, you know, it's more important to me that the story feel accurate than actually be accurate.
Got it.
And I think, you know, I think readers, as they read this, if anyone who digs into this is going to say, man, you really got some historical, you got your facts wrong on some of these things. But I think if you're there to enjoy the story and to engage with the characters, that's what matters.
Right.
And I want it to be, I want it to feel authentic rather than, you know, be, beholden to research. Now with the story of Vlad Tepes and his brother, honestly, there's not a lot of research out there. There's not a lot, you know, the history books are very sparse. What I said, you know, the kind of the story I told you a few minutes ago about how they were taken prisoner by the Ottoman Empire. That's pretty much what's out there and available. I mean, it's very vague beyond that. So,
an awful long time.
So I didn't feel that I was, that I had to have everything, you know, I had to be too, accurate with those things. I tried. I mean, there are little things, you know, that, you know, I read accounts hold that Vlad Tepes' brother Radu was a very, beautiful person. So that's a big part of the story. You know, I tried to play that into this story. I know where Vlad ends up, and I try to make sure that the story that we're telling takes us to in that direction.
Right.
But this is definitely a fantasy. It's not supposed to be this world.
Now it's interesting because, you know, we're talking about Vlad Tepes, and it's almost like he's a different character than the kind of legend of Dracula, the myth of Dracula. But the character of Dracula is one of the most enduring in fiction. His story has been told many, many times. Is this your take on Dracula? Have you always wanted to tell a story, or is this your take on Vlad and you still have a Dracula story to tell?
Well, I think everybody has a, you know, a Dracula story. Every writer has a Dracula story in them. But I think it's important to note, I don't think this spoils anything for the series. This is not a Dracula story. It's definitely a vampire story. There are vampires aplenty in this book. This is not a story of Vlad Tepes turning into Dracula. That was not something I wanted to do, with this book. It was more important. Now, never say never. Who knows? This book goes 30 issues. Maybe Vlad becomes Dracula. But my intent, at least in the initial stories, was to really focus on the brothers themselves and show a story of these kids as vampire hunters and how that would shape their lives, how it would test the relationship between them, and how it would position Vlad Tepes as the historical figure we knew, as Vlad the Impaler. And where that would take him, you know, how the story might take him to that place.
So that's really what it makes it unique in terms of, you know, like you said, it's not a Dracula story, but in terms of a Vlad Tepes story, I mean, that's often the story that people tell. They start out with him as, you know, Vlad, and they tell the story of how he became Dracula. So this is really a unique take on this historical figure, I think, anyway. Do you agree?
Yeah, that was, you know, that's what I really like about it. That's what gets me excited about the story, is that it's not, you know, it's not my intention to tell the story of, you know, the man's descent into, you know, vampirism. I'm not saying there's not an interesting story there. One day I may want to tell a story like that, but, this was definitely more about the man, about the boy who became a young man who becomes this man. And, you know, in the first few pages of Brothers Dracul, the story opens in the quote unquote present, Vlad as Vlad the Impaler.
Right.
And we see the horrors he's inflicted on the people around him. And then this is the story of how he got there. And I thought that was more interesting because I think, as much as I love Dracula stories and I love Bram Stoker's Dracula, to me, Vlad the Impaler was so much more frightening than Dracula himself.
Yeah. It's somebody you can understand. I mean,
yeah.
What ideas and influences are you drawing on to tell this story of Vlad?
Well, you know, it's funny, and this is a joke. It sounds like a joke when I say it. But I think, well, I'll get to the joke in a minute. Obviously, Bram Stoker's Dracula, all the vampire and medieval horror fiction I've read over the years, it all sort of informs the story and changes things to some degree and helps, helps make this, helps me tell the story the way I want to tell it. The thing I think is funny is I say Lost Boys helped inspire this because of the Frog Brothers. And the only way they really inspired it was a pair of teenage vampire hunters. And I liked it. I liked the idea of teenage vampire hunters, I guess. And that's not to say that Vlad and Radu are, acting like the Frog Brothers from Lost Boys. There's no death by metal moment or anything like that. But to some degree, I have to give a little bit of credit to the Frog Brothers for inspiring this kind of story.
Now, you mentioned yourself that Unholy Grail is the story of King Arthur. Here we have your take on Dracula before he was Dracula, Vlad Tepes. Are there other kind of legendary fictional characters from the past or real characters that became myths that you want to tackle in the future? Any ideas percolating over there you can tease us with?
There's always, I'm always going to have those kind of stories I want to tell. I don't know that I have anything. There's nothing officially percolating. I've always wanted to tell a Wyatt Earp story. I don't know that I ever will, but I've always wanted to. I've always wanted to do something, some sort of fictional story around H.P. Lovecraft. And again, not necessarily Lovecraftian horrors, but about Lovecraft himself. But again, I don't know that those will ever happen. But those are the kind of things that interest me. And occasionally as I'm brainstorming different things, I'll jot a few notes down about what that might look like. It's funny because, the folks at Aftershock asked me when I was talking to them about Brothers Dracul, someone asked me a very similar question about, different historical, historical stories I might want to tell. And I told them I'm kind of using Aftershock to define this, historical horror genre for me. It's where I'm playing with, these different, periods of time and putting sort of a dark and horrific bend on them. And maybe that's where I'll just make my, stake my claim in historic horror. And they asked me if Dark Ark and Unholy Grail and Brothers Dracul take place in the same world. It kind of took me aback a little bit when they asked because I'd never considered it. And I don't know that you'll ever see a crossover between any of these worlds, but I also noted that there's nothing in these three stories that would, there's no rule of mythology that precludes them from existing in the same space. So maybe they all exist in the same world to some degree. This is my shared universe. Is this really, yes, this really twisted version of history?
You're creating the Cullenverse. You mentioned
the Cullenverse. Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned the, you know, his historical fiction, but with this horror slant. And really Dark Ark and Unholy Grail, I would consider them both horror comics, but they have a very different feel. Where do you think Brothers Dracul fits in? I think for myself, Dark Ark is a little more mythic. Unholy Grail is a little more, you know, realistic, for lack of a better word. Where does Brothers Dracul fall on the scale?
Brothers Dracul, it has a different feel than the other two, those other two series. And I feel like it's a little more, it's definitely a little more action oriented. I mean, we're going to have some really visceral action scenes, and we're really going to, you know, be following these brothers. It's a horror comic, and there's lots of, you know, creepy, crawly things and horrible, you know, events, but I think more so than either of the other two books, it's a book where we're going to see a lot of, down in the trenches, vampire hunting. So it's going to get bloody and it's going to get violent. And these two vampire hunters are going to earn their scars. And maybe it's a little more, this isn't an exact comparison, but it's maybe it's a little more Aliens than Alien. You know, right. it gets your blood pumping a little more, hopefully.
Now, I want to touch on Dark Ark a little more deeply, because the trade paperback for Volume 1 does come out this Wednesday as well. But I would be remiss, and I don't think I put this in the talking points, but I just real quickly, I want to talk about your collaboration with Mirko Kolak, because the art, both in Unholy Grail and in Brothers Dracul, is beautiful. I especially love his facial expressions and his storytelling from panel to panel. So can you talk a little bit about Mirko and your collaboration?
Yeah. He's a surprising guy. And you know, you see this art, I think he's a little bit, it's deceptive sometimes when you first look at his artwork. Because there's some very complicated stuff going on. He does, he reminds me a little bit of like some Walt Simonson stuff. There's times when I'm reading this and I'm like seeing some real Simonson influence in it. I work frequently with an artist named Brian Hurt, who did a book called The Six Gun and The Damned with me. And Brian's a very, he's very picky when it comes to art, you know, and he's one of those guys who will quickly say, if he doesn't like something. And I remember him looking at Unholy Grail and he looked at me and said, "You got to make sure you keep working with this guy because he's awesome." and I couldn't agree more. And that was why I was excited. Mirko actually started talking to me about what we were going to do post Unholy Grail. And it was actually his idea. He wrote me an email saying, "What do you think about doing something with Dracula?" So he was the one who put that seed out there. So let's do a Dracula story. And then I quickly, you know, within a half hour, I wrote up a very rough pitch for Brothers Dracul, saying it's not Dracula necessarily, but it's definitely in that realm, because that's a character and a period of time and a historical figure he's very passionate about. So, I put that pitch together for Brothers Dracul and sent it to him and said, "Well, here's what I would do with the Dracula story. What do you think?" And he got excited about it. So, and it's nice that, he's a guy that when he gets excited about something, it comes across on the page, and he's doing some really cool stuff with Brothers Dracul.
Do you guys feel like you have a similar sensibility and kind of storytelling style?
Yeah, every artist I work with is a little different, and there's always, it's interesting because like the vampires in Brothers Dracul, I described a certain way, and the way they appear on the page is not they're a little different than the description or what I had in my mind anyway. And that's not bad. That's just, it's just different. So, it's fun for me because both because we do have some similar sensibilities, and it's fun for me when those sensibilities kind of diverge and I get to see something new and different that Mirko is bringing to the page.
Yeah, that's awesome. So remember, listeners, Brothers Jakul number one in your comic stores this Wednesday. So let's talk real quickly about Dark Arc. As I said, volume one comes out this Wednesday as well. I wonder, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar, can you give a quick recap of what it's about and the story so far in volume one?
Yeah, absolutely. So Dark Arc, we all know the story of Noah's Ark. The world is flooded, and Noah puts together an ark full of all the animals of the world to make sure that they will survive and that they will, you know, that this wildlife will flourish and the world can continue to exist once the floodwaters recede. And that's the story of Noah's ark. But what we don't know is that there was a second ark, and that ark is full of all the horrible things from the world, all the vampires and the manticores and the goblins and the werewolves. Everything that goes bump in the night is shoved into a second ark, which is controlled by this sorcerer named Shrey, and it too embarks, you know, out onto the waters to wait for the floodwaters to recede. So Dark Ark is the story of this ark full of monsters and all the weird cliques that form among these creatures and all the problems that a group of humans kind of tending these creatures might face. And that's where, you know, that's where this first arc of the book kind of introduces us to these characters and to the problems they're facing and the challenges they face. And we get to see in the first volume, there's a murder. One of the monsters on the, on Shrey's arc, is murdered. And it kind of sets off this sort of murder mystery and that leads to some, riots on the arc and we just follow these creatures trying to coexist. Even though monsters like that really, really can't, they can't coexist, and they really hate being, shoved in a large ship together.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil anything for you listeners, because it's a great story, and I encourage you to go pick up the trade paperback if you haven't read it. But just to let Cullen know, when I can't wait for volume two, because the fact that Shrey kind of has double duty, if you know what I mean, I find that so fascinating. And for him, it really, really sucks. As far as his
work. It's the worst situation for him, which makes it great for readers.
Yeah, exactly. He's got twice the workload. Yeah. Noah. So
yeah.
Awesome.
I'm glad.
How's the fan reception been on the series so far? Have you gotten a lot of positive feedback?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of positive feedback on it, and if I'm being completely honest, this is a story that I never thought would see print. This is something I've kind of noodled around in my head for years, and I've always considered it sort of a joke pitch. Something that I would just start, talking about to amuse myself. What if there was a ship full of monsters? and I pitched it to Aftershock thinking, I was just padding the list of pitches I sent to them. I was like, I'm never going to take this one, but I'll just add it in there. So, there's more, there's more content. And that was the one they jumped on, which that startled me. And then once they took it, I realized I had to take the story seriously. And if I was going to do it, I know it's an absurd concept, but I wanted to play it straight, and I wanted to play it, seriously and scary and dramatic. And the reception of that's been really positive. I'm so pleased that people have connected with the story. It's always interesting to me which characters and which characters people connect with, because I think some of the human characters are very interesting to me. But then, you know, readers love the unicorn. There's a pair of unicorns on Shrey's arc that believe they have been placed there by mistake, that they should have been put on the, on Noah's arc instead. And readers really love those characters because they're sort of sad and tragic and also pitiful and funny. And readers have always liked those guys, and readers have really gravitated towards, Cruel, who's this big, stupid manticore. It strikes me that how, these creatures are the ones that people are really, connecting with in some way.
Yeah, you know, credit to the guys over there at Aftershock, Mike Martz and Joe Pruitt and Lee Kramer, for recognizing a diamond in the rough, so to speak. I love those guys. It's why we do Aftershock Monday. I think they have a really good sense of what makes a good story. So kudos to them for that. Is there anything about the story as far as things that you've changed, or maybe a fan reaction, anything that has surprised you about Dark Arc to this point?
You know, obviously the characters that people connect with have surprised me. I don't know that I have, you know, there's nothing story-wise that I have changed. I mean, Dark Arc has an overarching story. I know where it ends and I know where we're going. But between the beginning and the end, it's all kind of, I've left it pretty open for what I want to do with it. You know, so I've got a lot of flexibility. There are things that I didn't necessarily intend, for the first arc. The moment you mentioned earlier, so not to spoil anything, but the events in the issue, you know, in the final chapter of the first trade paperback, that was not originally planned that early in the series. In fact, it was just something that dawned on me as it might be fun to do. And so the characters that show up out of nowhere at the end of the first trade, and the quest that Shrey embarks on in the second arc of the series, that was not necessarily intended when I started writing the book. So that's a little bit, that was a little bit of a surprise. And that's the fun of having sort of the leeway to change the story. As long as I'm moving towards what I envision as the ending, then the story can surprise me at times and do some things that, you know, that I'm not expecting. And if I'm not expecting it, my hope is that means the reader's not expecting it either.
Yeah, it's been a really great series so far. So again, listeners, Dark Arc Volume 1 in your comic shops this Wednesday. Also, Brothers Dracul, the first issue. I encourage you to pick both up. They're very much worth your time. So that's going to do it for Aftershock Monday. I want to thank Cullen for joining me.
Oh, thank you thanks for having me.
And remember, listeners, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Also, do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms so you know when all the new episodes drop. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.